Welcome to Intellectual Property Matters. In this WIPO podcast, we explore the fascinating world of creativity, innovation, and intellectual property. Let's listen, learn, and get inspired.
Hello, I'm Ben Rylan. Welcome to the third episode of Eye on Copyright Enforcement. Today we're looking at the fight against online copyright crime. And we'll hear from two people who've seen more than most of us and know what it takes to tackle this international web of nefarious activities. We've probably all come across a dodgy download or two. You might have received a suspicious-looking email, or perhaps you were invited to click on a link promising free access to the latest international blockbuster films. In many cases, these dangling carrots are fairly easy to spot, and thus avoid. But not always. And what's more, lurking behind these offers of free access to copyright-protected materials is often a vast network of criminal activity, stretching much further than that dodgy link. Later in today's program, we'll hear about what the World Intellectual Property Organization is doing to tackle online copyright crime. But first, we're heading to London to hear about what it's like to be on the front line of copyright enforcement. Joining me is Detective Sergeant Andrew Masterson from the Police Intellectual Property Crime Unit. Andrew, tell us a bit about the mission behind your section of the police force.
So we're a dedicated unit that tackles organised crime in relation to IP, so trademarks and copyright offences. And we look at the disruption as well as arresting and bringing those to justice around allowing either the sale of the goods or distribution of copyright infringing material. We work online and offline, and we seek new ways to disrupt this organised criminality, utilising a number of policing styles from traditional warrants and arrests and taking people through the court system and judiciary through to cease and desists or door knocks, and then also online takedowns and suspensions. Anything that is of the creative industry, so movies being released either prior to international or national release. We've had cases where studios have been hacked, generally through social engineering of passwords, accessing systems, and then either threatened back to the studio that they're going to release it unless they pay a blackmail fee, which we've dealt with in the past and successfully prevented. That was the one of the last Expendable films we dealt with. There's also camming, which is what people might consider the traditional sitting inside a cinema and filming it and then re-releasing it online. So we deal with those cases. In relation to the music industry, very similar, so either pre-release material or material that's being distributed without authority. And then also into the written word, so anything within the publisher's sphere, such as material or books being distributed without access to payment systems. We find that with authors such as popular novels, as well as literature in relation to academia. We work in partnership with industries to help target harden, if you like, in this respect. So we pass on the lessons that we learned and what we see in relation to people committing these offences, so that they can educate their staff or the people that represent them in the industry. So in respect of camming, I know the Movie Picture Association and associated bodies do a lot of work in cinemas where they now have thermal imaging within the cinemas. They have staff trained to look for people filming it. We find with criminality that it is very secular, what we might consider quite an advanced system where they'll start hacking into studios to try and obtain the movies. We'll circle back around to the very basic system of paying someone quite a small amount of money to sit in a cinema. And if they can get pre-release on certain titles, then that's worth quite a lot of money to the criminals prior to international release. So it is still something we see relatively consistently, but not regularly as we might have done in the past, where it is one of the only methods to obtain such material.
Well, look, some people might be thinking, these big Hollywood studios, they're not exactly strapped for cash. I'm sure they can handle a few illegal downloads. What's your view on that? And also, are there any risks for the users who consume pirated content online?
I'll tell this one, the myth that I spend a lot of my time to dispel, that it's almost seen as like a victimless crime, as you say. It's, you know, the studios or the high values of profits that are reported. It's actually the dangers to the individual, the consumer. And there are those that are very tech savvy that will download or try and access material that will protect themselves. But I'd say the vast majority of people would do it without maybe fully understanding the risks. And I say that this is linked to organized crime, and it's worth a lot of money to them. So criminals act in a business way. They expose the consumer, if you like, the person accessing the material, to a number of risks in relation to their own personal data by going on these sites. We find a high volume of them have malware associated with them that's downloaded to the user's computer without knowledge sometime. They can sit dormantly in the background, not infecting your computer. I remember kind of years ago, if you had a virus, then you had pop-up windows and it slowed your machine down and it might even crash it to the point of it not working. We don't see that kind of attack, if you like, anymore. This is very sophisticated malware that will sit in the background. It will take your personal data and report back. So by just clicking on one of these films or one of these creative works, whether it be audio or books as well, what you actually find is that malware is downloaded to your computer, your personal data is taken, and then the criminals use it to either create more sites or to protect themselves while they're committing these crimes. We view it as kind of the unholy triangle in relation to a report that was given, whereby accessing these sites, you expose your personal data. So your details might be used to either start other sites, or it might be passed on to other fraudsters who might use your details in an identity theft way. Your bank accounts could be compromised, and actually your finances could fund crime directly, or could be used to commit other purchases that you're not aware of, and therefore you become a victim of fraud. And then finally, that malware, as I talked about, sits in the background. So you might realize you're a victim of fraud. You change your password, you try and reprotect yourself, you don't go on these sites anymore. But actually, that malware is still sitting there, still reporting, still giving the data to these criminals that will then use that to continue to either protect themselves or commit further crime. And I think that's an underrated risk that the majority of people that go on these sites don't really appreciate. And there's then the associated risk to the industry, not just loss of revenue directly, but actually where that revenue goes. A lot of the big companies who supply this product to to people will invest in community projects. They'll invest in local areas and local communities. And unfortunately, we see that funding restricted, as well as content that you might enjoy being reduced.
You mentioned that the data stolen from users accessing pirate sites could be used for committing additional crimes. Could you just elaborate on the other types of crimes that intersect with some of these copyright-related offences?
From a criminal point of view, it's very much a business model. If you can expose someone to giving you your details or obtaining funds from them in an illicit way, why would you not reinvest that in further illicit or illegal methods? So we find on the very basics of it, tax evasion, in relation to the funds that are obtained through these sites or the sale of the products. But then that leads on to the money laundering offences, proceeds of crime being used to then buy other criminal assets, whether that be linked to human trafficking, modern day slavery, guns, drugs. We found that money from counterfeiting and copyright infringement, it spreads across and is reinvested, if you like, into these areas of crime. And again, that's an area that is sometimes either underlooked or maybe overlooked in relation to the public perception of how impactful this is. Recent studies from the IPO in relation to the UK impact, £9 billion a year is lost to the UK revenue. 80,000 jobs are lost each year in relation to illicit trade. It's a big impact to the UK economy, and globally, it's even bigger. Recent figures are putting it about $1.7 trillion in relation to criminal asset being obtained.
Well, for 10 years now, you've been successfully running an initiative called Operation Creative. Can you tell us about the objectives behind that and describe some of your biggest achievements?
Yeah, Operation Creative, as you mentioned, has been a successful targeting a way of looking at piracy sites. We have another operation, which is Operation Ashiko, that looks at the .uk domain, and we have a good relationship with Nominet in relation to suspending sites based on that domain. But when we came to pirate sites, we found that they were based all over the globe, and we have really good international partnerships. We have really good working relationships with, as I mentioned, private industry stakeholders, foreign government. But we found that these sites were kind of crossing over a number of different lines and falling between some cracks in relation to legislation in the UK and abroad. So we looked at where the impact is and how we can make a difference. And that's one of the keys to the unit is looking at new ideas with the industry to target this criminality. So Operation Creative looked to protect the UK economy and the creative industries by preventing and disrupting creative content from being freely distributed online. By some of the most high harm piracy sites, causing significant losses. And the way we did that was by targeting the revenue. We found that these sites were making money Some of them through donation options. So they had payment options on the sites, which we could look at the financial institutes to support us. But where there was advertising on these sites, that's where we found their main revenue stream came from. So the creation of the infringing website list came about. And what that is direct referrals from industry, from across the creative industry, to look at sites that allow access and therefore make revenue from the people that click on the sites from the advertising. And the infringing website list is what we consider the worst of the worst. So we encourage industry to engage. We encourage them to try and prevent the sites from operating through their own means. And where they can't do that, they refer to us as law enforcement. And through the distribution of this list to over 750 partners, again, around the globe, we restrict the visiting to these sites and actually therefore reduce the revenue. But we actually do something more than that. We go out to the advertising industry. We go out to the Gambling Commission. We go out to the people that are advertising on these sites. We engage with them to reduce the chances of them re-advertising on the sites. And again, helping them to understand where advertising goes to, because it's not as straightforward as they might pay a company to place an advert on a billboard or on a website. There's lots of algorithms in place that target the demographic that these people are looking for, and therefore it's constantly evolving, and that's why we need to do the same. We're also trying to protect consumers or unsuspecting consumers, as I mentioned, of the malware and viruses that are downloaded by going on these sites, and also protecting the brand from being associated with crime. When it first started, we were finding quite high-end brands being advertised on private sites that weren't even aware of this. So again, it's that education piece, talking to them and engaging to reduce the opportunity for funding. And as such, we're quite unique in our innovation there and dealing with piracy both nationally and internationally. But it's through that collaborative work with private companies, media organisations and local and international law enforcement that allows us to have the success we've had.
Detective Sergeant Andrew Masterson, thank you. In a moment, we'll head to Geneva to find out about the international effort to tackle online copyright crime. Stay tuned. You're listening to Eye on Copyright Enforcement. As we just heard, online copyright crime is by no means a victimless crime. There are, in fact, far-reaching consequences that impact many of us. Now, the internet is, of course, by its very nature, a global community. So, to effectively tackle online crime requires a coordinated international effort, which is why we're now heading to Geneva.
My name is Thomas Dillon. I'm a legal counsellor in the Building Respect for IP division of the World Intellectual Property Organisation in Geneva.
Thomas, before we go any further, I just want to talk briefly about the business model behind some of these websites that offer free access to copyright-protected materials. In most cases, they tend to be free. There's no cost to access the content. So, to put it crudely, what's the business case behind these sites?
Well, their business model is essentially that of old school commercial TV. They are selling the attention of the people who come to the site, principally to advertisers. So they are incentivized to have the most up-to-date and the most valuable pirated content at all times, because that is what draws people. Unfortunately, the publicity that the legitimate industries use to drive traffic to legitimate sales, of course, also advertises the pirate sales, as it were, the pirate supply. Basically, these websites sell advertising space to advertisers, and they make a lot of money out of it. I think it probably has got a bit more difficult because the advertising industry and right holders have realized the importance of advertising to the pirate ecosystem. But, of course, the pirates have the advantage that their overheads are much, much lower than the legitimate suppliers, the broadcasters, the film studios. So it's much easier for them to make sufficient revenues to cover their costs and make a profit. Now, I wouldn't say that we really understand exactly what the costs are of running a big pirate site. They're obviously not insubstantial. But a couple of years ago, one of the leading consultancies estimated that the top pirate sites are making millions, literally millions of dollars every year. The most popular was estimated at making nearly $26 million in a year. So you can see that there's a lot of money in the pirate business, and they clearly do make money out of it.
The WIPO operates a fairly ambitious initiative called the WIPO Alert. Thomas, tell me about that.
Yes, it's very simple, really. Over the 2010s, the 2015 onwards, a number of countries began to develop systems for compiling lists of pirate websites and then sharing those lists with the advertising sector, because the advertisers have systems already for controlling the placement of ads, but they need data to inform those systems. So these activities were happening to a greater or lesser extent in some national markets, but there was no system for coordinating that activity internationally. And so in 2017, we started to think about how WIPO could help to coordinate that activity. Of course, we are an intergovernmental organization. We're not the police, we're not Interpol, we're not doing enforcement as such, but our role includes coordination. And this seemed to be an opportunity for us. So WIPO Alert is a secure website, very secure, and it is used to aggregate lists of copyright infringing websites and apps, which are supplied from national agencies. And we have currently 12 countries or agencies in 12 countries that are members of the system. And we have over 6,000 live domains on the platform. Now, we have a cohort of users who are, some of which are absolutely leading global advertising agencies, and they download this data, or they consult it live, as it were, on the fly, when they are calibrating their advertising algorithms, so that when they're trying to place advertising on a website, they will be able to check whether this website is on the one of the lists that we aggregate at WIPO Alert, and then if it is, not place advertising on that site and place it somewhere else. It's really as simple as that. It's a voluntary system. There's no enforcement behind it, but it seems to have attracted the support of quite a few countries and quite a lot of leading advertisers. We're going to be in a position to make an announcement in July that an important country in Asia is going to be joining our effort. And we have well-advanced discussions with other countries to join, because there's essentially a mass effect. Once we get to a certain volume of data on the platform, then it becomes really effective. And I think we are moving towards that. Secondly, we want to add features to the database to make it more user-friendly, better searching facilities and so forth. And finally, we have a whole new project which we're thinking about, which is still at the feasibility testing stage, which would be based on WIPO Alert. We're calling it WIPO Alert Pay at the moment, and that would be a cooperation with the payment processors, credit card companies, the payment facilitators, who are essential to the support of non-advertising supported piracy. Because there's some kinds of piracy, in particular live streaming through pirated satellite channels, that is supported by subscription. And also you have, of course, the sale of counterfeit goods, and that also is not supported by advertising, but simply by sales. So we're thinking we might be able to adopt or adapt the structure of WIPO Alert to this other support, as it were, for counterfeit activity, namely credit cards and payment processes.
Well, from where I'm sitting, it certainly feels as if dodgy downloads have become less common. There used to be a lot of attention paid to file sharing sites or torrent sites, offering free access to music, films, or television series. Now it seems like, for a lot of people, it's just become too hard. They'd prefer to simply pay for a subscription to a few streaming platforms. Is that a fair statement?
Well, first of all, I'm afraid that the level of piracy on the internet certainly has not gone down very much. And the online offer from legitimate sources, of course, is much, much better than it used to be. But there's still an absolutely enormous problem of infringement, which is affecting various industries, but including the publishing industry, actually, which increasingly has found itself the target of piracy. But I think the answer to your question is has to be a balanced one. Obviously, we don't want to lock down the internet, and it certainly wouldn't be the role of WIPO to advocate for that. But on the other hand, copyright is the motor, essentially, of both the entertainment industry and the software industry. And these days, the intangible assets of companies in developed countries, at least, are worth more than the tangible assets, the factories, the vehicles, the machines. So copyright and other IP rights like trademarks and patents, these are absolutely at the core of the modern economy. And so if we don't protect them to a reasonable degree, then we're really shooting ourselves in the foot. And as far as copyright is concerned, it's also a very important motor of cultural diversity, because small and medium-sized enterprises in the cultural sphere, of course, they're very vulnerable. And in order to maintain a healthy diversity of content, we need them to be able to compete against the big boys. And clearly, if they're pirated extensively, as soon as they have a successful film, they're going to go out of business. So it's very important for the health of culture and the economy that we give a reasonable degree of protection to copyright.
Thomas Dillon at the WIPO in Geneva, thank you. And thank you for listening to Eye on Copyright Enforcement, a production of the World Intellectual Property Organization, brought to you with the support of the Ministry of Culture, Sports and Tourism of the Republic of Korea. I'm Ben Rylan. I'll be back next time with another conversation on copyright enforcement. I do hope you'll join me. Until then, goodbye.